This week we've been trying experiments of moving from the front door where we left the adventure last week in terms of the family. What happens to you when you move from the front door out? And this week we're talking about the neighborhood, the school, the job. What kinds of changes take place here? Bruce, in your own life, what's been meaningful to you when you began to translate Christianity outside the safety of your home in the neighborhood, for instance?
We began early with our children to pray with them and read the Bible and have times around the dinner table and all of that. And I expected from that very real times of prayer to have the fallout that we would all be a loving family, no bickering, no fighting, no pickiness, all taking out the garbage and cutting the grass and things. And, you know, it just didn't happen. Now, I don't minimize our times of prayer because that's where we all learn to pray together, the kids and their parents. But I found something that really surprised me about how God gives to us when we begin to be responsible in costly ways. And as we focus less on loving one another and on praying and trying to be kind to each other in the family, and became aware of a problem in our neighborhood. Now, this goes back to some years ago when integration was still a very hot issue in most of the American suburbs. And as a black family wanted to move into our neighborhood two houses away, it was a very divided neighborhood at that time. And we felt very strongly that this was, of course, the right, the true, and the thing we ought to do. Well, our children also identified with this. And so as a picket line was formed to force a builder to sell to the first black family, my wife and I wanted to picket, but also our children did. Well, the amazing thing that happened as we did something that we thought was just and right and true and of God is that the love that our family found for one another was incredible. So I see something about how as we hear God's call to be responsible in neighborhood or school or church, that yes, we do have a stand to take there, but often the fringe benefits that come back to us are incredible.
Well, if you carry this into your vocational life, I was working for a major oil company when this business of moving outside your house really hit me, and later went into a partnership with two other men in the oil business. And we decided that as an experiment, we would try to really be God's people in the oil business. Well, a lot of my friends are still in the oil business, and they'll understand when I say this, but this is not exactly Jerusalem, you know. It's very competitive, and we were independents and didn't have a lot of money. So I remember we decided that we would really catch each other, the three of us were partners, when we were doing unethical things or things in which we were not living out the love and the kind of integrity that we thought God would have us to have. And I remember that the thing sort of came to a head for us when we'd bought a large block of leases on some geological information we'd had. And we bought them for resale to a major company. And we sold these leases to the company. And all of a sudden, our geologist found out there was a mistake in the geology and that about a third of these leases were not going to be productive of oil. There was just hardly any way they could be because it was a dry well in the midst of it, and he hadn't noticed that. And we were just sick because we had all the money we had in these leases. So we began to sweat out. Our arguments went like this, you know, because we were panicky. This was our money. And we said, hey, look, you guys, this major company's got a whole department of geologists. Maybe they know something we don't, you know, or maybe they think the other is valuable enough. And certainly in this business, you know, you don't go around calling people, said, hey, we made a mistake. We want those leases back because they're no good. This was no easy thing anymore. All of a sudden, it's real bullets. This was our future. So, man, you know, I was so scared, and we all were. But as a result of, we decided, okay, we said we're going to live this thing out. And we all felt we'd go broke. And we called this company, said, we have something to tell you. We'd like to come out. So they thought, oh, my, you know, I can imagine what they thought. But we came out, and we just laid it out. We told them exactly what had happened. We found this thing, and you bought this thing on false information. We didn't know it. We really think, and we did redid the engineering and showed that it was still worth it. But we said, if you don't want a deal on that basis, we'll take it back. And we'd have had to eat it, you know. And then they said, well, we've got to think it over. And, you know, we spent 2 days just in agony. And the third day, and I hate to, I've never really told this story because it doesn't always work out this way, but they called us back and said, you're right, it is worth it. And we learned something, though, that was much more valuable than the deal. And that is, if you get in this Christian thing, you know, you never really know what you believe until you get to the point where you've got to depend on it. It's like C.S. Lewis said, you don't tell the strength of a rope by wrapping boxes with it, you tell the strength of the rope when you're hanging off a cliff by it. And somehow we've got to move the love into behaviors outside the home which have some risk. And that's kind of what we want to talk about today. All right, in this next exercise, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do an original research question on finding out what behaviors actually make people feel loved, because we're accused of being the cult of verbal Christianity. Now, talking does not make people feel loved nearly as much as behavior. And so what we're going to do is to ask ourselves some questions, and you can pass if you can't recall, to think back in your life. And the first question is to describe briefly that person who first comes to mind who had a tremendous amount of influence on your life. Now, this has to be someone outside your immediate family who made you feel loved, who made you feel like you wanted to learn what they knew and brought out the very best in you. This person may or may not have been a Christian. That's really not the point. The point is, what was the person like who really made you feel loved? Now, for this first question, only give a physical description. For instance, in my life, this was a fourth grade teacher named Mrs. Smith, and all I remember about her was she wore those white ruffly blouses, you know, starched blouses, and she smelled good. And she had gray hair. That's all I can remember about her. Okay, Bruce, can you think about someone who, just a brief physical description of a person outside your family who made you feel loved?
Oh, I surely can. I think of a man who was a clergyman, minister, a man who was probably one of the most exciting people I ever met. He was short and had kind of white hair and a very beautiful, radiant face.
Okay, great. Now, if the rest of you will go ahead in your group and tell about this person only a brief physical description. We're going to talk about what he did or she did later. Now, if you'll turn to your groups, please. Now, the second question in this original research project we're doing to determine what kinds of behaviors actually made you feel loved and people like you is this. What did this person do which made him so effective in your life? In other words, was it the content of what he said or she said? Was his attitude toward you? Did he spend special time with you? What was the behavior that made you feel loved and important? In my case, Mrs. Smith made me feel special in that when she stopped by my desk as a fourth grader, she would say things to me like, "Hey, you did a good job here." And one time she said to me, "Keith, I think you could write someday." And oh, I was embarrassed. I hope nobody would, you know, hear, because I was a boy trying to act real masculine. But the thing she did was she talked to me personally about things that pertained to me. And later I realized every kid in the class probably felt special. But she gave me special time. What did your guy do?
Well, when I was a young minister just out of seminary and making all the usual mistakes, this man befriended me. And I think three things that he did. First of all, he thought that I was worth his time in terms of sharing his wisdom with me. And I have never met before or since a man more full of wisdom. He understood God, he understood people, and he shared some of these marvelous insights about how life grows. I think the second thing he did was that he allowed me to know something about his own present hurts and pains. He was an equal. This wisest of all men I ever met told me about now, where the pain of growing old, or the confusion of this, or the hurt in a marriage thing or something. So I was his equal and priest. And the third thing was he believed in me, and he believed that I had a great future and told me so.
Okay, now, in your groups, go back in your groups, and what was it about the person in each case that made you feel loved? What behavior? Now, if you come up with something like, loved me, make it into a behavior. Say, listen to me, or something like that. What did they do? How did they show that love? Because that's the point. All right, now go back into your groups, please. All right, now that you have in mind that behavior, if one of you, if there is a blackboard in the room, or something to write on that you can all see, use that. If there's not, someone with a piece of paper, be the secretary and take this down, please. And what I'd like for you to do is to, the one listing things, instead of using the name of the person, just put a dash and then put the behavior, starting with the verb. For instance, dash, meaning Mrs. Smith in my case, gave me special time. Dash, believed in me. Dash, shared his hurts with me. I'm using the things that Bruce and I did, of course. And then once you have listed these things, and if there is a large group, you only list about 12 or 15. But once you have 12 or 15 listed, then turn the tape back on, please. Okay, now, will you please do this? Will you give the list to the leader, to see if the kind of things that real love is when it's walking around the streets and the job and the neighborhood and in school, to see if this is the kind of love that comes out of the Bible that Jesus Christ represented, to see what walking love, which is another way of saying incarnate love, looks like. Let's see what would happen if we put Jesus in that blank space, to see if this kind of love looks like Christ in how many cases. In other words, Jesus gave me special time. Jesus believed in me. Will you please complete your own list?
We've been talking rightly about the emphasis on behavior. And I think for people like me who tend to be over-focused on feelings, I've got to understand that love is not how I feel about somebody, but what I do. But there's another dimension here, too, and that has to do with the telling, the talking, the bearing witness, the putting into words what my motivation is, or really who my motivation is. And I think as we move in our neighborhood or schools or jobs, and people begin to sense that they are loved by us, and we know the reason is because God loves us, and we've begun to find that adventure, there comes a time we have to say something to people if they ask us, why are you doing this? Why do you take time? Why do you ask me about how I am? Why do you tell me who you are and trust me with your feelings? Then we can say, well, because I've begun an adventure some weeks or months or years ago, and it has to do with my own belief that God loves me and that I can know him and so on. So I think, Keith, we have to talk here about the need to say what is the reason for our hope, which is God's love in Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and you know, one of the surprising things in the last 15 years for me is that people who run around talking about Jesus and God and religious things turn me off. But people who love me, as these people have listened to me and pay attention to me, then I want to know what they believe, as you just said. But when I ask them, the ones who turn me on do something like you just did. They say, hey, I'm on an adventure. They talk about life, too. They not only live out the love, but they begin to talk about the adventure they're on. And the fact that God comes into that adventure, you don't start out and shove Jesus at them. You talk about the change in your life. And that's not to say, now, some witnesses say, I used to be bad and drink a quart of whiskey every day and sex.
Only Texans say that, a quart of whiskey every day.
Well, you know, you guys. But, you know, anyway, you talk about what used to be bad, and now, because of the adventure, you're good. And it seems to me that just turns me off terribly. And Jesus really didn't respond to that. When they said, good master, he said, don't call me good. And I don't think he was denying his goodness. I think he was saying goodness is not the point.
Yeah, you know, and for me, the most helpful thing in dealing with my embarrassment about talking about my faith was when I saw the distinction between saying something like, I'm a Christian, and that means I'm now a lover of God and man, which always is kind of a mixed thing, to where I know that I'm a Christian means I am loved. Now, I'm not embarrassed to say I believe the incredible thing that I'm loved. I believe that you're loved, that we're all loved. So I can say that to anybody.
Without bragging.
I'm not bragging then. I'm saying, you know, it sounds fantastic, but I believe that I am loved. And what's more, friend, I believe you're loved. And that is not embarrassing. That's good news.
Yeah, it's like that old thing that D.T. Niles said about the witness being one beggar telling another one where there's some food. It's not saying, I found goodness. It's saying, listen, I found hope. I feel loved, and I've never felt loved by people. I've been trying to earn all this love. I've been trying to earn all this hope by achievements, by all these things, and I'm miserable. But now I'm finding hope. And this leaves the other person the room to accept or reject it. And then if he asks you something more about, now, tell me more about this. Man, I just say, do you really want to know? And if they say, no, I'm just making conversation, I let them off the hook. But then finally, if they say, yeah, I really want to know, then I tell them about the thing that we did on this adventure about the commitment. You know, well, I found out that I really love myself. I was full of myself, and I am full of myself. And I just said, God, I'm full of myself instead of you. And I gave him permission to come into my life. And you know, this is really the message as it touches another person as I see it.
And the issue is, you know, what kinds of people should we be if we are to have a positive effect on our jobs or in our schools or in our neighborhoods?
Now, there are many other ways to witness, and there are times when people have to talk about the Bible and when they have to talk about theology. But what we're talking about is a simple thing that happens to you. As people begin to respond to your behaviors of love, then how do you begin to tell them where these behaviors started in terms of your own motivation? Let's take about 2 or 3 minutes now to be silent and to think of a couple of the things that we have come up with in terms of behaviors that you might use this week. Because the thing that's so amazing about these behaviors is that it takes no training to do them. Find a couple of ways you've been loved, and this week see if you can love other people on those same terms. And now, after the 2 or 3 minutes of silence, go into the closing prayer period.